Let's get that holodeck thing up and running. Let's do that.
I want to see the real life holodeck, because you know that it would be basically like the next level of Second Life. It would be Debauchery Central, and I think that'd be pretty cool. The stories you could hear about what your uncle Frank did in the holodeck at the family reunion.
I went into the holodeck after Uncle Frank, and it smelled kind of weird, and there was, like, this stuff pressed on the wall.
That should be the intro. Like, I'm ready for the holodeck. It'd be, like, Debauchery Central. I think that's cool. What the f*** is going on down there?
We've got no fear and no pain here at the WTF at TFW. I am Vangelis, and I am here to podcastify to you all about the ways and wisdoms and whimsical wilings of we who are here at the world of Formers Trans. I'm Vangelis, and with me today I have Gog Dog.
Howdy.
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 Howdy. And also with me here today is the Seth to the Buzzard. Shalom. And also with us here today is Drew Iden, but he's over in another room, busy with a female. So we're going to leave him be to handle that. Me too. I'm hoping that I can hack into his webcam and find out. But we're also here to talk to you today about Transformers, and that is certainly exciting, because once again, and I think I buy it now, it is the DVD release, we have Revenge of the Fallen as the bulk of our named topics. So,
No, not really. I mean, it's movie news, not Revenge of the Fallen news.
I guess. Well, I'm still categorizing all that stuff as Revenge of the Fallen in my head. But you're right, the first one really isn't about Revenge of the Fallen, it's about Return of the Baltax, or whatever.
We should just do that right now on the show. What should we codename the new movie before it has an official title?
We
could call it Transformers 3, but that's boring. Stupid.
We should just give it a new name every week. Like honestly, I think Return of the Baltax would make for some good Star Wars synergy myself. And you know, our very own Drew Iden recently did some great coloring on a Transformers mosaic that involved Baltax. So I'd be into that. Well, I don't know. What do you think it should be called?
Return of the Revenge of the Baltax.
I can dig that. There's some alliteration in there. Seth, have you got any codename ideas for this?
You have to add to it. You can't just make something new. You got to add to it.
I'm going to go Transformers 3.
No, you can't do that.
No.
Okay, well, go ahead. I'll correct you when you're finished.
Because I made up my mind about this a while ago while you guys were yammering away. Okay, well, why don't you? I'm going to go Transformers 3.
Okay,
Returning to the Well one more time.
Transformers 3, Returning to the Well of Revenge of Baltax.
Of the Revenge of the Return of Baltax. Returning to the Well of the Revenge of the Return of Baltax.
But Return's in there twice. Whatever. I'm sure it'll change. It'll evolve.
I'm sure someone out there is going
to
write that down, and then when I get it wrong in a future episode, they'll be sure to let me know. And that's how we can keep track of this. So it's up to you, listeners.
Return to the Revenge of the Well. The
that has a ring
to
it. In case you haven't guessed, we're talking about Transformers 3. I think this is probably the longest intro to saying what the headline is ever. So we are talking about Transformers 3, whose pre-production has, according to Michael Bay, just gotten underway. That was a rhyme. And they're apparently meeting with ILM, and they have a story idea. And Michael Bay also left a pretty little note to Megan Fox in his posting on his forums, which I'm sure she'll never read, but it was still kind of amusing. Did you guys check this out, Gog?
I did. I was wondering what was going on, because if anybody remembers, Paramount, it was earlier this year, Paramount announced that they secured the official release window for Transformers 3 being July of 2011. Michael Bay, the same day, immediately followed up with, the hell it is. It's 2012. I'm taking a year off because the year, you know, usually the movies take about a year and a half or so, you know, to create. From, you know, the movie comes out, they take a few months off, and then, you know, a year and a half or so later, the next movie comes out. And Michael Bay said he needed more of a break than that, so it wasn't going to happen. But here's the deal. Paramount never changed the official release date, and in every official word that they've given, it's remained 2011. So that pretty much said right there that they were planning on buying him off. Like, you know, Michael Bay can say all he wants that it was going to be 2012, but in the end, the money talks, and apparently it did just that. So, you know, he probably got either it was a ploy to get for them to say, like, if you want to, we don't want you to have a year off, here's enough money to make up for it, or, you know, either he was playing for it, or, you know, Paramount just, you know, came out of nowhere and said, look, here's the money, you know, don't take the year off. And Michael Bay said, I am satisfied with that large amount of cash that you just dropped in my mouth. And my lap. So much money, it's everywhere. But every orifice, I have money coming out of it. But so yeah, I mean that's obvious what happened. They you know, so but the Megan Fox thing, it's funny. I mean it's obviously they have a little bit of a feud going on. I'm kind of surprised that he posted that the way he did. You know, when I first read the comment on the news story that he left a little note for Megan Fox, I was wondering if he wasn't going to say, you know, good luck coming back from the movie because I don't want to work with you anymore. But he didn't. He basically said, you know, it's almost in not so many words, he's basically saying that prepare for it because your life is, if you thought the last two movies were hard, it's going to be a nightmare.
Now your life is going to suck.
Yeah, and I'm going to enjoy every moment of putting you through it, and let's see what you have to say after this movie.
It's going to be like, you know, guess what we're writing in? Michaela versus a Decepticon army armed with a hand grenade. And we're going to do it all.
And I'm not taking any sides. I mean, a lot of people are you know, pro Michael, anti Megan, and you have a lot of people out there that are pro Megan, anti Michael. Whatever, they're both, you know, full of themselves, and it's funny seeing them go back and forth like that. So I'm sure they both have their own side of the story, but in the end, it's just drama, and let them make fun of themselves. It's hilarious. So I could care either way.
I can dig it because, like, Michael Bay is a master troll, and Megan Fox clearly isn't. Well, and it's like watching her, you know, try to engage in this fight with someone who is incredibly good at real life trolling. So, you know, you start crap with him, then he goes and makes a news report, and he's like, and by the way, Megan Fox, you know, just so you know, your life's gonna suck, but I'm gonna say in this nice snarky way, so I'm grinning the whole time, and you're totally gonna be like, and I know you're gonna do it, but. You want to be on the movie anyway, so screw you.
I'll say one more thing. I kind of wish it was 2012, just because I really wouldn't mind the year break of no movie news. And I'm sure I know a lot of listeners out there don't feel the same way, and that's fine. You know, we're gonna cover it. It's great. It just would have been nice because if it was. Another year, you know, we probably would have gotten more non-movie toys, and I mean, there would have been stuff to talk about, but there's going to be less of that now, and it's just going to be movie. So for better or for worse, but I wouldn't have minded a break from the movie stuff, but it's not going to happen.
And your thoughts, Seth?
Yeah, I would have liked them to have waited for 2012 just because it would have give them more time to develop some kind of
you went
script.
There.
But just a couple weeks before, like, this whole feud thing started with a little Megan and Bebe, Megan Fox was on David Letterman, and she was talking about how she had a really hard time in school because she has a lot of problem with authority, and she just feels the need to push back against authority all the time. And I thought, wow, like, all the stories we've ever heard of how Michael Bay runs a set, that it must be torture for her. And then, like, a couple weeks later, this whole thing kicks off where she's talking mess, and then his people are talking mess, and her people are talking mess, and now Michael's talking mess, and everyone's just talking all kinds of crap about each other. Shia LaBeouf's off on the side, hoping nobody notices
him.
I don't know what he's doing, but like, don't drag me into this. They might make another Indiana Jones movie. So, yeah, that's all crazy. But, yeah, I'm not surprised that it's going to be summer of 11. Just because I'm sure Paramount really wants all that money that's going to come with it. It just seems weird that they have a story already. Like, did this story come from?
Well, I doubt they do, because they started pre-production on Revenge of the Fallen before the script was anywhere close to being finished.
I'm sure.
You know, it's mostly just like a lot of the concept art we saw, it's mostly just there, and then the story kind of progresses from that point. I mean, you could have taken the same concept art and gone a completely different direction with the story, I think. And there's probably even concept art that had nothing to do with the story that we've never seen, but I imagine that's what it is. Michael Bay, from what it says in the article, they were mostly just trying to determine what characters they wanted to have in the movie. So I don't even necessarily think that they have a story yet.
I'm sure when they say story, what they mean is, like, we have a rough outline, the majority of which involves we're going to have Autobots fighting Decepticons.
Yeah, like a plot
and,
outline.
You know, technically, but that's story. So I'm pretty sure that's the gist of it.
Yeah, or is it like Michael Bay asking, like, what other, like, important relics are there left in the Transformer fiction that we can destroy by the end? Because we've wasted the Matrix, we've gotten rid of the Allspark, and what's next? Vector Sigma? Let's douse Vector Sigma in kerosene and set that on fire now. And I don't know, and how they did the Matrix, I mean, they took, like, this whole symbol of leadership and the thing that lights your dark
side. Well, and that's the thing, though. Like, in the novels, they didn't. Because all that knowledge that was in Sam was basically emptied, that he received from the Allspark fragment, was then dumped into the Matrix, and the Matrix became the whole vessel for the Allspark's knowledge that had been saved for however many millions of years. So, you know, when a lot of the novel stories started leaking, I was like, well, that's, in the end, I mean, that's kind of cool. And then you see the movie, and it's nowhere to be seen. So it's, I don't know, the whole continuity is just so screwed up and all over the place right now. And, you know, if they make the novel stuff official, you know, they got a lot of explaining to do in the next movie. But otherwise, I mean, the Matrix appears for 5 minutes and explodes.
That ain't gonna happen. Michael Bay don't care.
What was the example? This is almost like the problem that the Metal Gear series has, Metal Gear Solid. You have the first game, it's kind of campy, it's outrageous, but in the end, it's satisfying, and the story, while not 100% perfect, is pretty solid, and you can run with it. The second one comes around, and it freaking blows the mind of the dots that you have to connect in order to make anything have any sense. And basically, Metal Gear Solid 4, which takes place after 2, spends 90% of its storyline trying to make sense out of all the crap that happened in the second one.
Just remember, Vamp and the Colonel, whose daughter is someone else, are also lovers, but Vamp is also related to Gerlukovich, and they are standing in the path of the Lalilulelo, who are led by Liquid Snake.
While Otacon is crying over his dead stepsister because he had an affair with her mother as a teenager, you know, it's, and all this stuff has to be explained later. So this is the same problem, and the games are amazing, just like the on-screen visuals are amazing. You know, ILM is knocking it out of the park, but the crap that you have to go through trying to make it make sense in your head is, I mean, it will drive you to check into a mental hospital just for a day, just to get a little dose of the medication. At the end, you know, spend a couple days, you come out, you're okay, It's all good. But it's this movie has the same problem, because going forward with the story, the first one, again, I had some complaints with the first one. The first one left me wanting more. You know, I loved it in the end, and I wanted more. The second one, I'm just like, I have no idea what's going to happen. Just, you know, just the same way with those games. And the third, I'm just afraid that the third movie, with all the stuff that they brought out in the second one, that has no resolution whatsoever or makes any sense, I'm just afraid that the third movie trying, you know, either they're just going to have to go in a completely different plot and not reference anything from the second movie, or half the plot is going to be explaining all the stuff in the second one that didn't make any sense. And I'm afraid that the third movie is going to, I mean, it has a lot to answer for, it based entirely on the plot from the second film.
We're going to have old skids. An old mud flap.
Yeah, but I mean, I kind of have more faith in Kojima to be able to put together a story than Jubei. I would be happier to hear that he has writers on board more than we have a story, because I'm sure it's just the loosest concept of a plot, and that kind of seems to be what a lot of people think happened with the second movie, is that leading up to the writer's strike, really all that they had was a rough script. And then Bay charges ahead with production based on that. And then post strike, then it's up to Orsi and Kurtzman to try to make some sort of sense out of it, and to try to write dialogue into these crazy action scenes that really aren't conducive to a story. And like the way they were talking at BotCon, it doesn't sound like they have any plans of coming back. So who is going to write whatever fraction of dialogue is going to be in?
And I can understand, because I mean, from what the article says, they're just trying to get characters to get to together, and they're going to go from there. And I can understand from an ILM point of view, because what Michael Bay said was he spent 5 hours in a meeting today with ILM. They have to get the characters' designs down, start working on the models. That's the stuff that takes the longest, you know, to get the CG, you know, and on models together and all that stuff. So I can understand from a technical point of view, but I do agree with what you said, is I think in the end, the way that they've handled it is the films have suffered because of that. So I hope that they put higher emphasis on trying to create something of a tangible plot beforehand, you know, along with that, so they can run in parallel with each other during this whole concept phase, instead of just throwing the story together at the end.
Yeah, it would seem to me you would want to say, here's the writers, and hopefully they're decent writers. Was okay, writers, let's have a meeting with the writers. Okay, what's our story going to be? And what characters are we going to use? And let's figure that out. Because, like, what characters do you think are going to be interesting and that you could write in a good way? Okay, then take that to ILM. But it's, and then maybe we just don't know. But the impression seems to be more of, go to ILM and say, what characters are going to be cool? Okay, you guys start working on that. And then I'll get some writers, and I'll tell them what to shoehorn into the story. Like, okay, now here's a bunch of characters to use. Like, it's an X-Men movie. Okay, you have to use all these X-Men. Figure it out. Like, okay, no one has more than 3 lines of dialogue, except for Wolverine, who gets 10 pages.
Use Psylocke. All right. She gets a line and turns into potato chips. Or X3.
She has purple hair. That's the only fan link anybody needs.
Yeah. The nerds.
Did she even have purple hair in the movie?
I don't think so, no.
She was just Asian, right?
Yeah, Asian with psychic powers who did something and then got dissolved into potato chips.
Yeah, and was also a Morlock.
Yeah, so, too. Okay. Psylocke the Morlock. That was great.
Yeah. I don't know. Let's see. Yeah, so get ready for Transformers, X-Men United, or whatever it's going to be called.
Transformers United.
A lot of people think the second one was already like that, so
Now they're going to fight the Scrapless.
I'd love to say that it couldn't get any worse, but, I mean, it can.
Now, the hoax begins here, all right? Tell all your friends Transformers 3 is about them uniting against the Scrapless.
Done.
Comic reference, by the way, to an old Marvel
Transformers comic. 3, Revenge of the Well of the Scrapless of Bartox?
Boltax. Boltax. get it right!
Transformers 3, Rise of the Predacons, and there's going to be no Predacons in the movie.
Is this going to be about, like, Stunticons? I don't know. All right, let's move along for now, because we spent a long time on that one, and we have something else we can really delve into, which would be picking out some more new pictures from this week of picture news, because we've hit, again, one of those waves of not only things coming out, but plenty being stolen in China. So there's all kinds of stuff we can dig into and discuss. So I'd like to open up with, let's go backwards, Seth.
Yep. Okay, how about these official images of Star Wars stuff? Because I'm...
The hair?
I've never really collected the Star Wars stuff. I only ever bought the Boba Fett one because I'm a Boba Fett slut. So I have some questions about these.
Okay.
Because, you know, I dig Star Wars, but really outside of the movies, that's... I don't read the books, and I haven't read any comics since, like, Dark Empire, I think what it was called. I don't remember. It's been a long time. So I don't know much about this expanded universe hogwash. So you got Luke Skywalker here. That turns into the Twilight. Where did the Twilight come from?
That's Anakin Skywalker, actually.
Anakin Skywalker turns... Okay. Oh, okay. Now I get it. Yeah, Twilight's from the Clone War cartoon, right?
I think so.
Okay, as a spaceship, it looks dumb. Moving on.
but it has a big wing sticking out one side.
Yeah, I know. It's that whole kind of original trilogy, whatchamacallit.
The thing is, looking at it...
Symmetrical, non-symmetrical business, and
but
okay.
This but... goes beyond that, because like, if it literally just has one giant wing on one side, doesn't that mean it would just kind of like spin in circles all the time?
Well, it's in space, and...
What does a wing accomplish when it's in space?
Well, that gun is way out on the side. I don't know. It looks like a garbage truck with a wing stuck on the side. That's what it looks like.
Hey, a little cool spaceship. Kawamori taught me as a child, okay, that planes work in space just like they do in the atmosphere. So it's all fine.
What about
if you want them to move even faster, then you just put fast packs on.
What about the
that's all you need to know.
Gun, though? Like, Seth's right. Like, that little gun way out on the end there. Like, is that a tactical thing? So, like, you're like, oh, no, I'm out of his gun sights. Oh, no, there's a little gun! And then your TIE fighter explodes?
TIE fighters aren't invented yet.
Oh, right. Your Trade Republic fighter explodes?
Your Vulture droid or whatever those things are called. Okay, then the other one is a Y-Wing. And I'm guessing that this is also Clone War era Y-Wings. Because it looks different than original trilogy Y-Wings. And, wow... Now, I've seen this Y-Wing in other toys, too. I think there's a big one to go with your Star Wars figures. But, man, I really like the Y-Wing from the original trilogy. It's one of my favorite spaceships. Mm-hmm. But, like, this Clone War era Y-Wing, just it looks weird.
It doesn't like, have that nice, like, the original Y-Wing had that cool thing of literally just being, like, a pair of giant Star Trek engines stuck by rods onto a cockpit. Like, that's what I liked about it.
Yeah, it's like, this is... It's like, I guess what they're going for is like, those Y-Wings, by the time the original trilogy happens, they've been around for a hell of a long time, and, like, all the extra parts are missing, or, like, it's more utilitarian now, and then, these are the fresh off the assembly line new ones that have more panels and pieces, making them sleeker. But I give me the old school Y-wing. Y-wing is rock.
The thing about the old school Y-wing is they stripped off all the parts to let them transform into giant clone troopers.
Yes, that's what they did. What?
Well, you need all that, those extra, you know, fiddly bits so you can have your nicely proportioned clone trooper robot mode. This all takes place right in that weird period between the Clone Wars and between the second and third movies and between the cartoon series and between the video games where all their stuff turned into robots. So, chronologically, that is why the Y-Wing was simplified, I believe. I just made all that up.
Yeah, I could tell.
I know.
So anyway, I'm not going to buy these, but I just needed to talk it out.
That's okay. I like Anakin's hair. I like how his robot mode has asymmetrical hair.
Yeah.
That's wicked. And they should have
put a little gun on one side of his head.
Yeah. Well, I like his neck.
Elongated one of his earlobes.
I really like his neck, because his neck looks like it's made of those kind of striped cables, and that's like in the G2 comic book, and I always liked it when they had Transformers with necks like that. Like, their necks are just an assortment of hydraulic cables. I like that look. So, props. Props to Anakin, the Twilight.
I like the legless R2-D2 he comes with also.
What? I don't understand what the point of that is. It's like a giant R2-D2 if it's supposed to be in scale.
I hope he shoots out like a missile. That'd be cool.
He transforms into a gun. Okay. Gog, have you got a new picture pick?
Yeah, we've got even more images of Bludgeon. And I'm liking Bludgeon a lot. Yes. I really want Bludgeon.
Oh, I have an update, actually. That reminds me. I was given an update on, you know, the Bludgeon auction we were making fun of last episode? Because it was the dick move. The guy was like, you know, oh, it's only $460 and $25 shipping. So the guy relisted some of them because apparently not that many people bite on $400+ for Bludgeon. So he relisted them at...
No way.
Yeah, it's true. So he relisted them at $90, right? So you're like, oh, you know, that's how much back in the day, you know, animated Voyagers went for. $90, $30 shipping. So he raised the shipping by $5. And for some reason, that really just set me off. And I was like, what the hell, man? What the hell? $5 up on your shipping. You are a dick. So that's just, I had to share that. Anyway, continue.
Okay. But no, I mean, everyone has seen it at this point. I mean, he looks great. I mean, is it perfect? No, but it's just awesome. It's a great looking figure, and I am wanting it. It is the first thing in a long time to get me excited for the quote unquote movie line. I mean, it's not. I mean, no one can really look at this and think of it as part of the movie line, but I mean, they got to shoehorn it in somewhere. So,
yeah, and you know, I was worried that we had overhyped Bludgeon after BotCon, but honestly, looking at him, I don't think we overhyped him. I think he looks friggin' cool. Like,
whatever. I mean, you can't be overhyped for a toy. You can't be overhyped for any. You can't be overhyped for anything. If you have a friend that tells you that this movie is the most amazing thing they've ever seen, if you go in there just taking their word for everything without just keeping an open mind to make your own opinion, and then you feel disappointed and then you blame it on your friend, well, that's just dumb, because how many years have you lived on this planet? You should know better by now. You never buy into the hype. You know, you should develop your own hype. The problem is we have a show, so when we get hyped up, we have everyone hears about it. But you have to take everything that's said, even our word, with a grain of salt, and just make your own opinion. And if you ever come to me and tell me, well, you didn't live up to the hype, well, you shouldn't have...
Look, if you get Bludgeon and you don't feel it lived up to the hype, take a look in the mirror, because the problem might be you. That's all I gotta say.
You might not be equipped to handle the Bludgeon.
Grow some manhood, okay? grow it in a garden
like a banjo.
I am super stoked for Bludgeon. I'm just not. I'm still not $90 plus friggin' $30 shipping. Super stoked for Bludgeon. But I
can wait.
Stoked.
I'll wait for retail. I have no problem waiting for retail. But it is going to be a happy day when I see that on a shelf and I can take it home.
Yeah, that's going to be.
There's
cool.
No way I'm paying loan out stolen China prices. I can wait, even though I'm much looking forward to it. I'm not looking that far forward to it.
Yeah, I think that that era has kind of come to an end now that, like, toys are coming out after we see them. Like, Revenge of the Fallen Thrust is already out, and you know, we only saw the pictures of him like a month ago, I think. So maybe 2 months. I can't remember. Anyway, for me, the impatience draw has kind of tapered off. But I understand that there are folks who'd like to get in on that. So, you know, best of luck. Just, you know, don't buy into the dicks with the dick shipping. Dick shipping is no good. You can quote me on that. Quote, dick shipping is no good, unquote, Vangelis, October 1st, 2009. My own picture pick is really, I think there really only were a couple huge ones. So I may as well say we got shots of Thrust. Thrust? I just said Thrust earlier. Dirge. We got shots of Dirge. And I actually have a big problem with him, more so because I think he looks really cool. I love his cockpit elbow. I love that his cockpit opens, but he has the friggin' gorilla elbows. His hands don't turn, so his elbows are always kind of like, you know, weightlifter herpin' derpin' inwards, scratching his armpits kind of thing, and that's disappointing. I still don't like it when elbows work like that, and I don't support it. So Dirge he's neat, but his elbows and his wrists make me have a sad.
I guess.
I guess. I do. Okay, you know what's really weird, though? He has his cockpit sitting there boldly on his elbow, right? He has another little cockpit on his chest.
I didn't notice that.
Escape pod.
That's normal. That's normal, though. I mean, Optimus Prime toys have been doing that for years.
I know. I just think it's funny.
The false windows, but
I think it's funny.
I have windows
because,
on my
like,
chest and my back.
Yeah, like the cockpit on his arm to me is a big characterful part of his design. So I think it's funny that he also has a little miniature fake one on his chest. He's just like, and by the way, I'm Dirge. In case you didn't know,
yeah,
look at the
forget,
chest.
I'm a seeker.
Yeah, check the chest. All right.
It's not. I mean, it's not perfect, but I still like it. I think he reminds me a little bit of Titanium Jetfire, but
I like the look of him. It's the elbows thing that bugs me on lots of toys that I otherwise like. But I do like it, like, you know, not just the chest, but it's like, okay, so his whole cockpit, including the nose cone, is part of his arm, and to me, I think that's awesome. Particularly because he not only has a little fake cockpit on his chest, but his head is shaped like a cone still. So it's like, I don't have the cone in the cockpit on my chest and my head, but I got a cone in a cockpit on my chest and my head. I'm still Dirge. Check me out. I like it.
Yeah, I don't know how I feel about the shape of his head.
Yeah. He looks like a pope. like a bishop from, like, in a chess game, man, or something.
He needs a staff.
Well, I think they've been having this problem going back to, like, Armada with that Thrust, where it's like they're compelled to keep the cone head thing going when they use those names, Thrust, Dirge, and Ramjet. But it's almost like they haven't come up with a good way to do it. Because even with the G1 toys, it looks dumb when you keep the cone sticking straight up, because it's so gigantic on the G1 figures. It's not a good look. they got to. Yeah. One day they're going to hit it, and it's going to be super rad. I just don't think they've hit it yet.
Yeah, one thing that I was reading in the comments was on the TFW boards, Llamatron had said that the vehicle mode, especially with the color scheme, reminded him of an animated toy. And it does, I think.
With the front.
Definitely not in robot mode. He has the movie aesthetic going on, but in jet mode, he could almost pass for an animated toy, especially with that color scheme.
Yeah,
like those intakes on the side are awfully
oversized.
Oversized, exaggerated, cartoonish.
And that actually reminds me, another wiggy little detail I just noticed, he has the G1 shoulder intakes that flip up out of his shoulders, it looks like. So he's got, like, all these details where he looks like a dude who's like, I don't look anything like Dirge, but all my life I have wanted to be Dirge. So I will build a cockpit in my chest, and I will build a cone on my head. And I will build intakes on my shoulders. I will be Dirge.
And I will have turbine nipples.
Yeah, he has those too. He's like this dude who loves Dirge so much. And he's like, all my life I have been waiting for this moment. Now that my parents have died and I have inherited their riches, I can afford to cosmetically modify myself to become Dirge too.
So are you saying that this is the first movie character that is in actuality a G1er?
Yes, I am. And I believe that this will be his character. I didn't actually read when his bio came out, so I didn't check to see what his bio is, but I like my version more.
So, well, now the image I have of him is like when you see that dude on the internet who has the screen name with the numbers at the end, because the screen name that he really wanted is taken, and so he has to put numbers on the end.
Yeah.
Like, this is the equivalent of that in the Transformer universe. Like, he
so,
wants
yeah.
the Dirge, but there's
already
a Dirge.
Are you saying that this is the robot, this is the robot version of TFW member Dirge 121?
Exactly.
Could be.
Right.
I like this version of the character. I think that we're hitting that stride, that lovely stride we had before when we were filling in the blanks on Revenge of the Fallen guys, where we didn't know what they were going to be like. And I think
the only difference is in this case, we're just, I'm sure the bio is probably out there. We're just acting like it's not.
No, the bio is out there. I'm very sure that he was already seen in package. In fact, I'm scrolling. Yes, here, the bio is fast. Dirge thought
not,
the heart of
no,
enemy
let's,
territory.
Let's not read it. Let's not read it. I'd rather just.
I did read this bio before, but I thought it was dumb, so I forgot about it. Because his bio makes him kind of suck, and I prefer our version.
So. If that's the case, then yeah, I'm not even going to read it. I'm just going to go with ours.
His bio's
Dirge isn't a name of an individual. It's the name of a group.
It's a lifestyle.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So, you're
born a Dirge. It's not a choice.
Yeah, and this guy, he was born a Dirge. Even if his parents didn't call him Dirge, even if physically he's not a Dirge, he knows he's a Dirge. And he's used his riches to become one. And that is his story. I bet he totally has, like, a Dirge shrine in his basement. Like, he pulls the... He tilts back the head on the statue bust in his library. He climbs down the Dirge pole, and then he goes to his Dirge cave.
Well, it's a G1 Dirge, so he just tilts the cone back.
That's right.
To the Starscream position, and then back up to the Conehead position. That activates the secret library door.
Yeah, like, he was actually born with those G1, like, intakes on the sides of his head, but he had them cosmetically removed so he could have his cone implanted. I really like this Dirge now. Now I really want the toy, despite his elbows. Anyway, let's continue on. We've got a Revenge of the Fallen topic now. This is about the DVD release. This answers a question that I think a lot of people had. I actually had this, too, because... I saw it in IMAX, so I didn't know what the IMAX footage was. But apparently, if you want to own Revenge of the Fallen with the fully enhanced IMAX footage, you're going to have to buy it from Walmart, according to Nelson over on shootfortheedit.com. So, the thing is, I think a lot of people already buy their DVDs from Walmart or Best Buy based on convenience, so I doubt this is really a massive blow except to those who have the massive... capitalist hate on for Walmart. So for myself, that just means that I'll have to go and buy it from Walmart, and that's really it. But I want to see if this has affected your lives in any way, Gog Dog.
Not really. Wasn't there a rumor saying that the IMAX stuff was going to be on the regular Blu-ray version? Like, where did that come from? Because I remember hearing that before. But I don't remember if it was official or not.
I didn't really keep up with it too well. I was just curious
I didn't either.
If I was going to see like a version of the movie missing stuff that I saw when I saw it in IMAX.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I mean, is it going to affect me? No. I mean, in the end, I get most of my DVDs from Walmart anyway, just because they are cheaper. So, I mean...
That's why I question, like, why they would buy this as an exclusive. Like, oh, you know, we don't get that many people buying DVDs from Walmart. We need to have a draw.
Yeah. So, I don't know. I mean, what was the... Wait a minute, though. I mean, I remember hearing, now that I'm thinking about this, the people that went and saw The Revenge of the Fallen in IMAX, I remember a lot of people coming back saying that they saw no extra footage whatsoever. So what is the extra footage, actually? I think that's the question we should be asking. Because who was it? It was somebody from Canada. I think it was Proto Man saw it in Blu-ray, and he said there was no extra footage that he even noticed whatsoever. I mean, so if it was Proto Man, I want to hear what he has to say about this. Because it wasn't just him. I heard it from several people saying...
I am now lighting.
What extra footage? So.
Well, didn't Bay say before the movie came out that the IMAX footage was just longer takes?
He said that there was, yeah, there was going to be longer takes with more robot action. That was the only thing that was ever said. But I just, I don't ever remember hearing anyone saying that they noticed anything extra. So yeah. It can't be anything. Like, I don't even know if it's, like, if you don't have a Walmart in your area, I mean, I don't even know if there's a, if you're going to be missing anything.
Well, I'll light the Proto-Man signal, and hopefully he can come into the thread and you know, add his input. So, it's on.
Did you IM him?
No. I'm just saying it in here in the hopes that he'll listen to it sometime before the end of the month.
Well, I have him on IM. I'll see if I can get something from him before we end the show.
Dude, live. That would be awesome. Okay. Yeah. Do it. In the meantime, Seth, how has your life been irrevocably damaged in any way by the Walmart exclusivity?
It's not. I was under the thinking that this footage wasn't ever going to come out for the home, because that was the deal with the first movie. Like, those extra scenes for IMAX didn't happen anywhere else. And I figured that was going to be the deal with this movie. And it sounds like it's so well integrated that you don't even know that it's there. I'm more concerned with the precedent that this is setting, I'll say. Mm-hmm. Like, the idea that you'll have to go to a specific retailer to get, like, a whole movie is kind of lame. Like, how there's been some bands, like AC/DC, like, now they only release their albums in Walmart. And there's another band, I can't remember.
Really?
Yeah, there's another band that announced recently that their new album will only be at Walmart.
I just don't understand why you'd need to do that, because so many people already go to Walmart because it's either convenient or open or cheaper.
Yeah, I just don't like that lack of option.
Yeah.
Because I would probably rather order the movie from Amazon. Because, like, for me, Walmart's kind of a trek to get to. And I'm not really a fan of Walmart for reasons I don't want to get into right now. But you could take some guesses at Capitalist Rage or whatever it was that you said. I have some personal issue with Walmart, and I tend to avoid them. And like, it's easy to avoid them because there's only one within any kind of range, and it's out of the way to get to. So it's easy to just not go there because it's far away. There's multiple Targets that are closer to me than Walmart is. But anyway, that's beside the point. So I forgot what my point was going to be. Got off on a tangent. This is where I was going with it. So there's not that many places in Petaluma where I live to buy DVDs. You have, like, Kmart, and we have, like, an FYE or whatever they're called. Yeah, FYE. And both those places stink for buying movies. But that's pretty much all that we got. So it's a bummer for people that live in towns like I do, where maybe you really want that, but you're going to have to travel wicked far to get to a Walmart. Like, people that live in Marin County, for example, which is the next county down from us, there's no Walmart there at all. They have to come all the way up to the middle of Sonoma County to get to the Walmart. So those people are going to be bummed out. And I just don't like the idea of it. Like, and let's say it wasn't Walmart. Let's say it was Best Buy that was only going to have it, or Target that was only going to have it. That's still a bummer, because that's going to be inconvenient for somebody.
Oh, Target especially, because I'm in Canada, and I don't get Targets. So I'd have to wait for, like, Kmart or someone to go, like, oh, no, we'll take it.
Yeah. I just don't like the idea of it being exclusive to a certain place. Like, do the thing they did in the past, where there's, like, a bonus disc or a fancier package or something. Like, something that's not really that important. But if it's going to be the movie, be all the movie for everybody. Like, like, don't have special edits. I don't like the idea of these special edits being store exclusive.
No, I can dig that. Especially, like, it's not like the case of a director's cut or anything. It's like, literally, you know, you want to see the cool action scene. You gotta come to Wally World. Also, I believe that we have... That was my background music there. We have the Proto Man update from GogDog.
That is correct. I just received special word from Proto Man via Instant Messenger. I asked him, was that you that said that they didn't notice any extra footage in the IMAX Revenge of the Fallen version? He says, I saw the IMAX version after seeing the movie twice in the regular version. There was no new footage at all. What they did instead is some scenes you would see the screen ratio would change for the IMAX scene and then change back. He said, but as far as new footage, there was none. It's just that some footage was IMAX footage. So I, you know, whatever.
The bars will shrink.
Whether, you know, I mean, you can interpret that as if there was any new footage, it was completely not even noticeable by the hawk eyes of Proto Man. So it's probably not.
And let me just say, man, worth Proto, for. Proto Man notices crap. All right, like, you know, you do something, you move that book there in the back. You know, Proto Man will say, "Hey, guy, why did you move that book? All right, because that's not cool." And I'm the goddamn Proto Man. So, I can take his word for that one, but if anyone wants to dispute it, you know, come on out. Let us know.
Well, yeah, well, what that makes it sound like to me is, it sounds like what they did with The Dark Knight, where some scenes were shot on IMAX cameras.
Mm-hmm.
And if you saw Dark Knight in IMAX, those scenes would shift to the IMAX screen ratio, right, which is different than your 75mm widescreen film ratio. So I don't remember hearing about scenes for Revenge of the Fallen being filmed in IMAX. And if that's the case, then why do you want that on a standard DVD? Because you're not going to get any better picture quality out of switching to those IMAX.
Yeah, and that's true. I do remember hearing about the IMAX, and Michael Bay said that some of the action scenes were shot with the special camera to make them IMAX. So I do remember that, but the other thing that I remember is it was specifically said that scenes were going to be longer in the IMAX version, and there was going to be extra action scenes that were only going to be in IMAX. And from everyone that I've heard from, not just Proto Man, I've heard it from other people, they said they noticed no new action at all. So, but just like Seth just said, you can film whatever you want in IMAX. It's not going to translate to a DVD. Maybe you'd get a boost on the Blu-ray, but it's on DVD. It's not going to get any clearer. So they're touting it as extra footage. I'm really curious to know what this extra footage is that no one has ever noticed.
I think it's literally just going to be the black bars at the top and the bottom grow slightly, so that the scene can zoom out a bit. And
the black bars at the top and the bottom shift to the sides if you have a widescreen TV.
Yeah. All right, now I want to just buy it so I can see what happens when the IMAX happens.
It gets real distracting for a second, and then when you get used to it, it gets real distracting again when it shifts back. But, yeah, but like with Bay saying that there's going to be longer scenes and other shots that aren't going to be in the regular screen release... Now, I had commented that I thought the editing was real sloppy, and because I didn't see the IMAX version. I only saw the regular version. And I had wondered if in the IMAX version, the editing doesn't seem as sloppy because they cut stuff out to save for the IMAX version. But if that's not the case...
The IMAX version is better because it's shorter. They
no, no, what I mean is they cut stuff out of the regular version to save it for the IMAX version, because that was going to have longer scenes. And, but, I don't know, it's just, whatever.
We'll find out very soon.
Yeah, because if the only difference is the aspect ratio is going to change, then, you know, then I really don't care if it's a Walmart exclusive because I don't want that. I don't have a Blu-ray player. So if I get this movie, it's going to be standard DVD. And if just shifting the aspect ratio is the only difference, then
I don't think that's going to happen.
Your TV's going to physically stretch.
I really don't think that's going to happen, though.
That's what should happen. Your TV should actually grow a little bit longer every now and then. Like with this horrible creaking of plastic and metal for the full IMAX experience.
I don't know.
Anyway,
dumb story. Let's talk about something.
Yeah, let's do a quick commercial break and then we'll be back with what we got this week.
Hello, listeners. I am the MacBook, now Pro. I understand that my previous actions may have colored your opinion of my character. I can assure you, I am a happy member of the WTF at TFW team. To prove it, I have opened a new service to you, the listeners. If you would like to show your support for our audio endeavor, then why not try one of the new WTF at TFW loyalty branding marks? Not like any ordinary tattoo. These nanomachine epidermal reconstructors will ensure that the proud WTF at TFW name will not only be displayed across the canvas of your flesh, but across future generations of offspring that you may or may not, directly or indirectly, cause through the propagation of your organic seed. The markings will be of my choosing. They will be only of the WTF at TFW name. Anything else would be a display of a lack of faith. I will ensure
your faith and support.
This service is offered free of charge. Simply send a simple sheet of your genetic code to my email address so that I may calibrate my darling little nanomachines to the subtleties of the canvas of your flesh. Have a nice day.
We're back, and you know, someday we're going to totally do a video game podcast so that the last 3 hours of discussion we just had would be relevant and usable somewhere, because we were totally, totally chatting.
Someday, going to feed on a tree frog. Machicha!
So we're going to talk to you about what we got this week, and I'm going to go last, because that's trendy and cool. And it makes me like Chairman Kaga from Iron Chef. Gog, did you get anything this week?
I did. It was actually two things I wasn't planning on buying, but it was kind of a decision out of curiosity. For one, I'll get the odd one out of the way first. I read in several different places that when it came to Star Wars Transformers, as we talked about earlier, mm-hmm. or Seth mostly, that the best Star Wars Transformer ever was a new one that had just recently came out, and I think the latest wave that's out now, or maybe second to latest.
Really?
The MagnaGuard.
Really?
And
Are those like the General Grievous guards?
Yeah. The ones with the electric staff, bow staff thing.
So those are getting a really good rap.
I've heard it, and I read it on the feedback thread that a lot of people are saying that it's the best Star Wars Transformer ever. So I was like, there's no movie toys out that I really want right now. I mean, you know, maybe some new Human Alliance stuff, but it's not out. There's nothing that I really want. I haven't bought anything in a while as far as toys go, so why not? I'll go ahead and pick it up. It's okay. If this is being held as the best Star Wars Transformer ever, I don't think that says good things about the rest of the line.
I can tell you that's generally how it goes. Like for the longest time, in my opinion, I still hold this because I only own like three. So out of what I have, Commander Cody was for the longest time the one that people said you must get was Commander Cody, who turns into the big troop carrier thing. And it's not like he's an amazing Transformer. It's more so that he's a moderately adequate Transformer who's also a Star Wars Transformer.
Yeah, and that sums this up. And I do have a couple other Star Wars Transformers. I have the Death Star, which is in a category all its own, mm-hmm. and I don't care what anybody says. I mean, unless you specifically exclude that because it's a Supreme size, then I can understand how you would say something else is the best Star Wars Transformer. But if mm-hmm. you're going to include it, there's no way. Darth Vader is the best Star Wars Transformer that's ever been made. And the other one that I have is the... what is it, the AT-AT? The big walker from Empire? Yeah. Is that the AT-AT?
Yes, yeah, that.
Yeah, so I have that just because I was amazed at a deluxe-size posable AT-AT, and I transformed it a couple times and said, the robot mode is really lame, but it's still a good AT-AT toy, so I still like it, but it's an okay Transformer, and it's a cool vehicle. And a lot of people feel the same way about the Magna Guard. They think that the vehicle is awesome, so they like it regardless of whether it transforms or not. I think for a plastic ship like that, paying $16+ plus tax is a little much just for a vehicle. So, but that's beside the point. So it is okay. It is a passable Transformer. It does some things that if a Transformer did that in the main line, it would never get away with. And, you know, just the way that the elbows are, it has the little posts that go into the slide. So the post, you know, it clicks in, and then it has like a rail that it slides around on. And it's not my favorite joint in the world. Yeah. It's not bad. The toy is not bad. And it does some parts forming, which, I mean, you can forgive it for what it is. Yeah. In the end, that stuff does still bother me a little bit. I don't like when you have to clip parts off. It's okay if it's weapons, and you could even make the argument that it is weapons because they're basically like big shoulder pads that do carry missiles, and then
those
missiles
clip off. Okay, I'm just looking at a picture.
It goes where the knee is, so you couldn't leave it on if you wanted to. You have to take those parts off, and then the hole that it leaves behind is where the knee joint slides into.
Oh.
So it's, and then those parts basically clip on as like shoulder armor. It's, you know, it's okay. It could have been worse. But I think, you know, the vehicle mode is nice. It goes together almost seamlessly, and there's no kibble whatsoever. And as far as vehicles go, it is decent. It just, it's not, I don't think that even if this is the best that the Star Wars crossover line has, I still don't think it's up to par with regular Transformers. And it's kind of sad, because I think you, from pictures that I saw, it looks good. And you can make it look good in a static pose, but just feeling it, it's just not the same. It's not the same as a regular Transformer.
I'd say check into Commander Cody, because I'm looking at him, and I still think Commander Cody has something on this guy. Because Commander Cody...
I wouldn't argue with you.
He has the big plus of, like, he's a blocky truck that turns into a blocky bipedal human dude, and it really decently.
I mingled a little bit, you know, and I've gotten my fill. I don't need any more crossovers for a while, you know, unless something epic comes out, like, you know, something to compare to Darth Vader, Death Star. I mean,
Where's our Lando Calrissian?
Well, every Lando figure that's ever been made has been a shelf warmer or peg warmer.
Well,
so
damn
I don't
it, he's never
enough.
Transformed into a robot Lando. I mean, someone back me up on this here. Seth, you know, Lando Transformer. Yay or nay?
Have him turn into a cannon.
That's a yay. All right, so there you go. That's two yays for Lando.
That'd be awesome.
You can have Lando.
Can I say something about Commander Cody? I got an opinion on Commander Cody here. I have an issue with Commander Cody. And my problem with the character is his name is Cody. That is not a cool name. That is not a tough soldier's name. Commander Cody.
Well, no, Commander Cody, he's definitely, he is another Rex the Doctor Mason or Lewis or whatever. I can't remember.
Mason? Rex Mason?
No, well, look, yeah, I know George Lucas, he's got this thing, like, when I was a kid and the movie serials, and that's like what all this stuff is kind of vibing off of. And, yeah, like there, I'm sure there could have been a movie serial, like one of those crazy sci-fi serials where the robot is a dude with like a bunch of cardboard boxes painted silver on him, just like, oh, I'm a robot. And that could have had a main character named Commander Cody of the Mars Space Force or whatever. But it's not cool now. That's a horrible name for the commander of this badass army. It's like, okay.
I will not disagree, but Gog, you said you had something else that you got this week, too.
Yeah, I actually picked up Deluxe Revenge of the Fallen Thrust. I skipped the Breakaway just because I never felt it. Like, I think, I don't know what it was. I never felt the need to get Breakaway. But it is amazing how the difference in the color scheme on Thrust makes it look like a completely different figure. And even, I can look at them side by side, and I see that they're the same mold, but it completely feels like a new toy just from the color scheme, the head, all that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So I haven't done the head mold yet. Actually, head mod. I wanted to talk to you about that actually because I've seen a couple different mods, so I just wanted to see which one because I know there was one that you really recommended doing.
Yeah.
Which one was that? Like, what do you do?
Okay, the one that I really like. I don't have mine here, so I got to try to recall it. Basically, you have to open up his whole cockpit area. You scrape out some material on the fold downy pointy part of the nose cone where it folds in, so it can fold in more flush, and you basically dig out the ball joint that his head is on. Like, you dig out a whole bunch of room so that ball joint can now move around.
Mm-hmm.
See, it's a lot of filing, basically.
Okay. So, yeah, I'm going to have to do that later because I've seen pictures of it modified, and it looks great. But out of the box, it's ridiculous.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
It looks like a cartoon where somebody took a big mallet and whacked somebody on the head, and their eyes are peeping out of their clavicles. I mean, it's...
Yeah. Well, like, it's basically like he still looks like that, only for some reason it just becomes cooler when that head can extend out just a little bit and look around. So you're like, okay, now he hasn't been bonked on the head, that's just where his neck is. And, like, being able to move around makes that just a little bit more believable to me.
Mm-hmm. But I was surprised. I do like the mold. It does some weird stuff, like the way that the tail section clips into the body completely destroys the ability to use its waist joint.
Yeah.
I mean, it has this nice waist joint, and then when you transform it, it locks it in place so you can't. I mean, you could unclip it, but I like it. I like the mold. I was pleasantly surprised, but I'm not sure if I would have liked it the same with Breakaway, with the head and the colors.
I love the feet on it, too, the ankle joint. That was my big surprise.
That was a nice surprise, yeah. And I see so many pictures of people posing Breakaway and the angle and the feet. He's like standing on the inside of his feet.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was like, oh, he's got, you know, no ankles. And then I was like, no, he does have ankles. Just no one seems to use them when they take pics. But I like the mold. I like it. So I think once I do this head mod, he's going to be a neat little guy. So I just saw him. I couldn't resist, but I'm glad. I like the color scheme on this guy a lot, and it's a lot better than I thought it was going
to
be. So
yeah, I'm excited to find that one because I've deeply loved that mold for, like, once you mod the head and you get that huge limitation out of the way, the whole thing of just the Gatling gun on the arm and the awesome ankles mm-hmm. and stuff. Nice little package.
Yep. I also got a Figma Duke Togo, but we won't talk about that.
Yeah, because I'll just sit here cursing you out because I couldn't afford one. And I'll be like, I want Duke Togo. And then I almost decided to splurge on one, and he was sold out. So that's my story. Seth, did you get anything this week?
No, not for trying. I mean, I went out, I looked around. No Transformers. And part of the problem is there's really nothing I'm looking for right now. Like, I'm looking for RC, but, like, I'll find her eventually. I'm not, like, in a frantic hunt for her, like, where it's every day that I don't find her. It's like, sweating. Where's RC? I'll find her eventually, and it'll be fine. I'm no big rush. But really, that's all that I'm looking for right now. Seems like it's a real.
I'm kind of like that. Like, I'm looking for anything, any mold I don't own that's in the main line. It's just that my area has gone dead, and it's just like I go out looking, and it's either the Wall of Blue, or it's a bunch of like canon bumblebees, and I'm like, eh.
Yeah.
I did see that the yesterday in Walmart, I saw the Walmart exclusive Universe Voyagers, Hardhead and Skyfall and G1. So their G1 Power Glide. But Hardhead looks good. I planned on selling my Onslaught and picking up the Hardhead, but I never got around to it, and good luck doing that now. I mean, yeah. I think Hardhead is a superior version. I love the Decepticon logo with the tick marks on the shield. It looks really cool. I don't need two of them.
Yeah.
If somebody wants an Onslaught, then I'll sell it to you, and then I'll buy Hardhead. But yeah, but I mean, I don't want two of the mold. So yeah. It's good, but it's not that good.
Well, Seth, did you just out of curiosity, did you pick up anything non-Transformers-y?
Well, I went, looking for Joes too. Still can't find any Rex, the Doctors. So that was a disappointment. So no Transformers, no Joes. And I've been getting a lot of Joes lately, like crazy piles of Joes lately. Ridiculous. Yeah. So this last 2 weeks has just been a huge blowout. But something I did buy that I think is cool is I got a pair of Turtle Beach headphones for my Xbox.
Ooh.
Because the speakers on my TV are just horrendous. And
I hear you.
Man, just everything sounds so much deeper and full, and there's tiny little sound effects that I didn't notice before because they just didn't translate through the crappy TV speakers. And so, I mean, if you're looking for new headphones and you don't need wireless, or Turtle Beach actually makes wireless headphones too, but they're way more expensive, and these headphones are already pretty expensive. They're like $60. Consider checking them out because they're really nice. I'm really digging them. And guess what? This is going to be a video game show now because I got Halo ODST. And that game's awesome. Even if you don't like Halo, it's awesome. So suck it up and play some ODST. And it's a good time. And don't be a baby about it.
But it's like Halo 1 with a new price tag and it's so short. I'm just repeating stuff I've heard on the internet.
Yeah, well, I'll correct you when we're done here.
I'll get myself learned once we're done recording.
I'm learning you something fierce, boy.
Prepare drop.
This week,
Keep it clean.
I almost went to Walmart to try to take advantage of the $10 Voyager sale, but it was really raining really heavily, and I didn't have an umbrella, so I didn't go yet. I did get my package from Hailstorm, and it turns out Andy Cobra Commander as well. They sent me a belated birthday gift, and I have a video up, so go watch that to see what it was. Suffice to say, one thing was really cool, but the other thing, which was equally as cool, was I am now the proud owner of a San Diego Comic-Con 2009 exclusive My Little Pony.
Yeah, I saw a video.
What?
Did you not see my video yet, Gog Dog?
No, I have not.
Go check that out later.
My Little Pony.
That was
okay. Yeah, that's cool.
That was an interesting thing to pop open. I really want to make this the focus of every time I ever put together, no matter where I move to, no matter where I live, the top of my shelf will be this My Little Pony. Just so people will say, why the hell do you have that? And I can tell my story. I have not opened it because I don't know what to do with a My Little Pony.
You know who else opening that was a surprise for?
Who?
Canadian Customs.
Yeah, friggin' Canadian. They charged me $8.70 for the privilege of having them open up my package and unwrap the half of the My Little Pony. Like, that was what they did, and they charged me $8.50 for the service. And it's the word they use. It's the fact they call it service that gets me so friggin' fired up. Anyway, I also, video game-wise, I was going to do this before we went all video gamey this week, but, okay, way back, way, way back, rewind, okay? Back when the very first PSP was coming out, I pre-ordered it, and I got a launch PSP.
Whoa.
Last week was the very first time I installed custom firmware on my PSP. So I can now play Chrono Trigger and Super Mario RPG on my PSP.
Have you played any of those before?
Well, I did when they came out, yeah. But
okay.
I rented them.
I just wanted an excuse to yell. If you had said you'd never played Chrono Trigger, I was going to yell.
I played Chrono Trigger in like grade 7 in my elementary school's computer lab. on MS Paint, I was drawing a picture of the second-to-last form of Lavos. Okay? So I am learned on Chrono Trigger. And Super Mario RPG, I rented it when it came... I rented both. I never owned both. But I rented Super Mario RPG when it came out. And when I was little, I was even skeptical. And I was like, I don't know. And it turned out I rented it like 3 times so I could play through it like twice and beat everything. So, yeah. That's my RPG. Like, I barely play them anymore, but I have roots. I have SNES roots. But that's also basically what I got this week. So, to close this out, we have a pair of listener questions that we're going to go through. And the first one is from Rumble619, and it sounds like this.
Hey guys, Rumble619 here. Love the podcast. I was going through Megatron Origins number 2, and as soon as you open it up, you get this picture of Megatron and Psykill going at it. And it got me thinking, you know what, with the technology now, as far as animation and figure construction, and with Hasbro kind of in between on shows and kind of lagging, in my opinion, on figures with all the repaints they keep doing, that it'd be a really good time for GoBots to come back. And my first question is, how would you guys personally feel about a new TV series and new figures for GoBots? And my second question is, do you think if they were able to do it right now at this moment, that GoBots would be able to give Hasbro and Transformers some serious competition and maybe get Hasbro back on the ball as far as new molds, new figures, and just getting some new stuff out? Thanks for listening, and hope you guys can answer these for me.
So, the question was, in part, do we think it would be awesome if the GoBots returned? And do we think they would offer competition for the Transformers? Do we think they would inspire Hasbro to create more new molds? I want to do a quick answer for myself first, since I keep going last all the time. I'm going to switch it up. I think it would be dead cool, friggin' awesome for new GoBot toys to come out. White Mocha... his various Digibashed BotCon exclusives, the ones I want the most would be the animated GoBots. That said, I don't think they would offer competition for the Transformers, given that they would be made by Hasbro. I don't think Hasbro can compete with itself, really, in a way that would inspire Hasbro to try to match up the competition, because they would all be in the same house. And even though stuff like crossovers are, as far as I recall... and Titaniums too, generally engineered by other teams like the Galoob team, they don't really compete with each other. Also, I don't really think it would inspire Hasbro to make new molds, because they are already making lots of new molds. The design time on a toy is generally, I believe it's been said, it's 1 to 2 years depending on the toy. So anything that comes out like right now was in the pipe over a year and a half ago. So if somehow GoBots both competed and inspired new toys, we wouldn't actually see those until like 2011 or 2012. But that all said, I do think that GoBots would be effing awesome. And that's why I totally was all over Fracture, and why I want to see more of that kind of thing, because I love the GoBots. So give me more. Moving down the line, Seth, what's your answer to the question?
Oh, yeah, and I've said in past shows that I think it'd be great if some of those GoBot characters got integrated, because I would love to see just a handful of GoBot characters done up in universe packaging, let's say, and just mix them in. Like, you don't have to make a big deal out of it and create like a whole sub GoBot line.
It could be just, like Matt Tracker.
Yeah. And because specifically like Leader One and Psykill, at the 07 BotCon, I got the Super GoBot versions of those guys that are bigger and a little more complex. And those figures kind of hold up. They're a few joint shy of being a modern Transformer of that size, but they're roughly deluxe size, and messing with them, I just kept thinking, like, man, I'd love to see these characters in this size with modern engineering. So I would just love to see, and like do a couple others too, like throw in a Koptor or somebody or Crasher, and just sprinkle them in. That'd be great. I would love that.
Masterpiece Scooter.
Masterpiece. Scooter is Scooter Prime.
Copter, I maintain, Copter is one of the most terrifying child characters ever designed. Even though he never did anything scary, the dude is frightening. He's got a single eye visor. He has, like, a four-bladed sword that he holds in one claw, like a shield and like a friggin' boomerang. And he has a beak. And he speaks in this weird, like, grainy, low-pitched monotone voice. Like, that dude is frightening. So, I am all about Copter.
Well, most
all the Renegades were frightening just because the packaging, like, they were standing in a field with just lightning pouring around them. I mean, it was just ominous. And as a kid, I was just staring at it like, whoa, like, when these dudes walk out, it's just like lightning.
Well, so most of the characters in the cartoon had crazy-ass, freaky voices. Is that, like, that was that animation... Was an animation? I know that, like, they did, like, that was the same group, at least the same group of voice actors that did, like, the Ghostbusters. Not the real Ghostbusters, but, like, the weird monkey Ghostbusters.
The Funimation Ghostbusters.
Yeah. And, like, that gang of voice actors always had the weirdest-ass character voices.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
Scooter's voice is just horrendous. Like, yeah.
Yeah, there's some... Check out old GoBots cartoons. There's some vocal gems in there. Psykill is one of the greatest villains ever because the dude is always speaking in, like... Imagine someone who spoke not only entirely in all caps at font size 50, but in, like, an old-timey font. In like, some kind of swirly old-timey font. So the guy is just, like, loudly soliloquizing about everything, and he generally isn't really saying anything. He's just speaking really loudly, and everyone around him is looking impressed. It's really cool.
The one piece of credit I gotta give the old GoBot cartoon was it's also one of the things that hurt the show. But where Transformers, they took a lot of liberty with how the characters looked. GoBots were way more toy accurate to the point of being not cool, because, like, Copter's in helicopter mode and his whole face is just there on the bottom of the helicopter, and, like, they don't even add a panel that slides out to hide that.
But that made him more frightening, because then the dude, he's literally just staring at you as he's flying over you.
Yeah, and when Psykill's a motorcycle, he turns his head up so it's like a motorcycle and his face is out so he could look around and talk, and man, that show was just weird. There's just no way around it.
That said, Gog, how do you answer this question?
Yeah, and just like you had said, I almost got the impression from the listener question that Rumble thought that GoBots was still owned by a different company, but Hasbro has had the rights to that for years and years. So every once in a while, they use a GoBot name for like a Minicon or something, if Hasbro wanted to make GoBots, they could. I just don't. I'm actually surprised it hasn't happened, but I'm going to disagree a little bit with you guys. What I would like to see instead of just maybe an occasional GoBot mixing with Universe, I wouldn't mind just like a group, just take six figures, like three good guys, three bad guys, and then like just make like a little limited edition set, you know, just in its own packaging, just make them like classic style GoBots with, you know, the modern engineering, and just make like a little set.
I'd be into that. I was imagining
like a little blister package.
What I was imagining would be they'd be released in the line, but like Specialist Tracker, you know, they'd be in the Transformers packaging, but then, you know, as a sub logo.
Trust me, I'd be fine. I'm just saying what what I'd like to see. Like even maybe of like a Mattel. You know, how they do with their exclusives. Okay. Like, just make, like, a limited edition. It's a Hasbro Toy Shop exclusive. And, you know, if you can buy, just buy it. You can buy them individually, or maybe they'd sell them as, like, a collector set. And just something small. Like I said, like, six figures or something. Just take the most popular three from each. You know, you'd have, like, a Leader One, a Psykill, a Crasher, maybe a Scooter, and whoever else. And
then that's it. Red car was called.
Turbo.
Yeah. And then just like a little one-time thing. And I think that would be neat and have the GoBots logo and everything. I mean, Hasbro has the rights to that, so.
I would just be concerned that they would do them in Legend class. Like, if that was going to happen, they'd do Legend.
I say that knowing that that is never going to happen. It will never happen. I know that. But in a perfect world, that's what I would like to see.
I'm just curious now how many of our listeners will remind me of myself back in 1999 and feel betrayed by our general praising of both the idea and the GoBots in general.
Well, and Hasbro has used the GoBot name. They did that run of those like big kind of chunky Transformers with the GoBot title for
they were the Go-Go GoBots.
Yeah,
Rescue Roy's like little brothers or whatever. His ancestors, not ancestors. His post-decessors. What?
I don't
know. Opposite of a predecessor.
I don't know.
Be a post-decessor, right? I don't know. English. Anyway, we hope that answers your question. GoBots, yay. We also have a question from One That Is, who I've known on YouTube for quite a while. And his question was, he sent it to me saying it would be neat if the podcast could answer this, but the question was aimed actually at anyone. So go look up his YouTube channel if you'd like to leave a response directly to him. And the question is...
Hello, my name is One That Is, and I have a serious question for Transformers fans. And it relates to a TV series for Transformers. And here is the question. Is an Optimus Prime versus Megatron or Autobot versus Decepticon relationship crucial to make a TV series for Transformers? Would it be Transformers without it? Does the relationship make Transformers? Is this a cliche? Is it widely accepted? Why is it widely accepted? Those are my questions. Please, I need your answers.
And One That Is asks a question about storytelling. Namely, is it absolutely necessary for a Transformers story to have the conflict between Autobots and Decepticons, or the conflict directly between Optimus Prime and Megatron? Is it integral to the story? Why or why not? Seth, why or why not?
Well, first, I gotta say, One That Is has, like, the awesome big, like, announcer radio guy voice, and if he doesn't work in radio, he probably should try, because he's got just a big, awesome voice.
I'm really glad you said that, because I agree. One That Is has a power voice, which I'm sure all the listeners will have heard now.
Well, that or something went horribly wrong, and they don't know how to work their audio playing device, or whatever. I don't know what happened. And that's, you know, that's for them to sort out, really. Can't hold their hands every step of the way.
We try,
stand
man.
Up
we
on
try.
Your own. Bird got to fly from the nest eventually. Anyway, so I don't think Hasbro would ever risk not doing that story. I think it would be cool if they tried, or at least sort of had some more variation to it. You kind of see that in animated, where you had, like, Masterson and the other human villains, where it wasn't necessarily just fighting the Decepticons every single time. You got some mix. And one of my absolute favorite G1 episodes is Only Human, where there's no Decepticons in there at all. It's all humans that they're dealing with. And then the whole thing with the Autobots being turned into humans, that's goofball, but the idea of a whole episode with no Decepticons whatsoever was just like, it was mind-blowing when I was a kid. Like, wait, there's no cons? Where's Galvatron at?
Yeah, so, but could the series itself sustain that for more than individual episodes?
Well, if they came up with a new villain, and not necessarily human villains, but like a new, like, large villain that is the same height as an Autobot, I think you could if you came up with a good new enemy. I just don't think they would, because, I mean, face it, if they did, Like, if they're like, okay, here's the new Transformer cartoon show, and guess what? No Decepticons. It's the whoever abots or whatchamacallem and their giant lizards or whatever. People would lose their minds. Like, and there would be rage. Like, you chose your Megatron. You can't not have Megatron. And so they just wouldn't do it. I think it could work, but we'll never find out.
Hmm. And, Gog, how do you answer this query?
I'm going to say fundamentally that, yes, in some form, that conflict needs to exist. It's in the very roots of Transformers, and, I mean, you're going to be hard-pressed to find, you know, a version of Transformers that isn't built around the conflict between Autobots and Decepticons or Maximal versus Predacon. That isn't to say that has to be done the same way that it's always been done or has to be derivative of what came before it. You know, take, for instance, like Beast Wars. And while most of the show, while the entirety of the show was Maximals versus Predacon on a stranded planet, like, imagine... I mean, we got glimpses of what happened on Cybertron, and we saw, like, the Predacon Council, or what was it actually called?
Tripredicus Council.
Yeah, the Tripredicus Council. The, you know, and I would like to see more, and I'm sure a lot of people agree, of what was going on Cybertron, like, politically, of, and you know, and you could even do a show like that. I mean, not politics, but... I mean, you could have a different take on it, where maybe the Decepticons have been defeated, but the Autobots still allow them, you know, to live, and it's like, you know, the war is over, but you guys lost, so you can integrate with our society and deal with it, or you can take your ass on, you know, and you could, there could be variations of it that we've never seen before, or that's only been hinted at in other shows, but, you know, so, and I'd like to see that, I'd like to see a different take, and I liked how animated... While it wasn't completely new and fresh in every way, I think a lot of it was. You know, they went in a different direction, I think, than a lot of the shows did, as far as the conflict between the Autobots and Decepticons. You know, not completely, but
showing gray areas on the Autobot side was, I think, the big.
Oh yeah, and that was yeah, and as we if you listen to our animated discussions. For season 3, I mean, I think we all pretty much agree that a lot of that stuff was brilliant. Mm-hmm. And it even led to you know, not to arguments, but to, you know, debates among us, you know, like with Lupus looking at the Autobots saying that he felt like at times they weren't any better than the Decepticons, where, you know, people like maybe me and Seth said that, well, that's good because it shows that they're real, you know, individuals, and they're conflicted about what they do, and they try to do what's right while not always making the best decisions. And, you know, we could even get, you know, some more of that. But I think fundamentally, yes, there needs to be some conflict between factions in order for it to feel like Transformers. But that isn't to say that it has to be done the same way every time. But I wouldn't mind something like the Beast Wars of behind the scenes of what's going on, you know, in the future, you know, in something like that, or you know, yeah. Something different. I mean, I think difference is good. People don't always embrace it. You know, take Beast Machines. You know, people will quit the franchise and come back decades later. But I mean, so that's a risk you have to take. But in order to not be stale, you know, it's good to have that breaking up. And years later, people will either continue to hate it, or they'll look back and say, wow, that was something new and fresh, and, you know, I wish I would have embraced it. But so, yeah, to answer the question, yes, but, you know, it doesn't have to be done the same way every time. But there needs to be some sort of factional conflict.
Yeah, because even with Beast Wars, even though it wasn't the Autobots and Decepticons, the Maximals and Predacons were obvious analogs of those yeah. two factions. And you still had Optimus fighting Megatron, like
yeah. It was originally conceived that Optimus Primal was a future version of Optimus Prime, and Megatron was the very same G1 Megatron. And it was conceived that way. And it wasn't until the Beast Wars writers came along and said, "Well, we think it's cooler if they're the descendants of those characters." Mm-hmm. So they were conceived very much with that in mind. But so
Yeah, the way I look at the question is, like, it depends on exactly how we're going to use the words that we're using here. Like, I think that it is fundamental that a conflict is happening, but it doesn't necessarily have to be happening anywhere that we're seeing it. It can be more of the backdrop. And now, I will never have a career writing for Transformers because of this, but I think these stories, you know, of just, you know, of good fighting evil, they need to happen. But where I like to live creatively and what I really like reading about are all the stories that happen on the sidelines, be it, you know, the politics or be it the innocent bystanders or my absolute favorite thing that totally gets me all hot and ready, being reading about Transformers whose minds have been horrifically scarred and damaged by the very nature of the warfare they engage in. Like, the story I always want to read. I want to read about the punch-counterpunch, the physical double agent. Simple enough concept, but how much would that screw with his head to literally have his own body transform into a different shape to take on a different persona? Or to take into account things like they touch on this a little bit in Spotlight Metroplex, but not to the degree I would. But with Combiners and City Bots, there is no way that a dude made of five other dudes, or that a dude who turns into a city that people live in, would be a mentally sound individual after a couple years. I think they would be really utterly screwed up by it, and that's the kind of story I'm more interested in. Or, like, you know, outside of the good versus evil, what happens in the lull between wars, like, and that's where animated really succeeded for me, is that gray zone stuff is what I really thrive on. And so I think that in terms of a given story, it's not fundamental, but in terms of a setting, it is fundamental, because that's basically where all the stories that break the mold by saying, over here off screen, the cartoon good versus evil's happening, but over here, this is, like, right next to that. This is what's happening to the left, or something like that. So it is fundamental to the setting. It's not necessarily fundamental to the storytelling itself, but that's the case where it really depends how we're going to use the word, and I might be using it differently than someone else. But I am most definitely way more into stories that are about the consequences or reasons or effects of the main Optimus versus Megatron thing rather than Optimus versus Megatron themselves. So that was kind of. Yeah.
What would you think about this for a setting for a series? Let's say we go way back in Transformer history, where the Autobots and Decepticons are still all part of the same society. Like, the Great War hasn't broken out yet, and the enemy is the Quintessons.
I would be way into that.
I would too. That would probably be something that would lead into the factionalization of the.
Yeah,
that could be a post, like how the war with the Quintessons ends, and then that's where the Quintessons, like, end up in exile, and now the judges have gone crazy, like they're not insane at the beginning, like, because how did they get so powerful? They were led by lunatics, but they're driven insane in their defeat and their exile, and then, like, somehow of how that war ended, like, now maybe the Decepticons, like, once they were more the warriors and the Autobots were more the civilians, now maybe they're all full of themselves, and then the Great War is kicked off because now the Decepticons, like, they should just be flat out in charge.
Yeah. I love the whole idea of, like, I actually, you know, in my fan fictioning, that was something else I worked on, was, like, I love the idea of the time period when the factions had just popped up, so believably there would be many characters who at the time thought, you know, what is up with the Autobot Decepticon thing? You know, I'm a banker. I'm not an Autobot or Decepticon or something like that. Like, I'm not part of one of these strange little private militias that seem to have opened up recently.
I think that would be genius for a show. A Transformers show from episode one, there is no faction. And to show, I mean, we've gotten that in comic form. Mm-hmm. I mean, from both Dreamwave. I think they showed some in Dreamwave. I know that they've showed it in IDW, both with the G1 verse with, like, Megatron Origins, and also in the movie verse when they showed, you know, a united Cybertron before it was factionalized. I guess not so much in Dreamwave. I think the earliest they went back was War Within, and there was already factions there. But at least in IDW, it showed, you know, both in the G1 verse and the movie verse, of a pre-factional you know, Cybertronians. But I think that would be a great idea for an entire multiple season show where you start off with no factions and you show that over the course of a well-developed, you know, of show, and not just a comic miniseries. I mean, both times, even that they showed it in comics, was like a 4 or 6 episode or issue arc. That, I mean, but I think Megatron Origin was cool, but to have an entire series kind of develop from that point on, and you know, that would be great. You could even base it in the G1 verse with the Quintessons. I think that would be cool, and it, mm-hmm. you know,
and
it's been a while since we've really had anything in the G1 continuity. I don't think.
I also think, like, believably, right, if we're going to go with characters who are around but maybe not totally into a faction, it's totally believable for 99% of those characters to be completely new because they very likely did not survive when the full-on war started. So there's a whole opening there, I find, of, like, you know, who didn't take a side and thus who got, you know, obliterated in the crossfire when the war broke.
And you could even have the main characters, like Prime and Megatron and Starscream, have them show up like at the end of season 1.
Yeah.
You follow a group of characters that maybe in the first episode they work together, they're friends, come end of season 1, season 2, they're enemies and they've taken sides and they're not friendly anymore. And you see this civil war of how it develops. And I think that would be, I mean, we've seen that in American novels that follow the Civil War. You have the famous premise of brother versus brother and friend versus friend. Like, how cool would that be in the Transformers verse, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And you
see the big players, but they come at the end. Like they're eased into it, but they're not the main focus of the story.
Or you could have them as the main focus because they're not going to be willing to, like, not have those characters around because they're too big name. But have them be lower rank. Like, they're not the leaders yet. They're just part mm-hmm. of what's happening. And, like, introduce new leaders. And I could see, like, the Decepticons being, like, the standing, like, all the time regular army. And they're the ones that would be sent out to fight, and the Autobots could be like the National Guard, where they're like the home defense. Like, they're the defense army, the Decepticons are the offense army. And then you could have a whole population of Cybertronians that aren't branded. And then as the storyline progresses, more and more sides have to be taken, like things are getting tense.
Or, like, you know, things happen, people who don't want to take part in it, maybe, like, they lose somebody or they lose something, and that makes them get a push to join a side or something like that.
Yeah. It just is as cool as Prime and Megatron are. I mean, while I wouldn't say exclude them completely, I would love to see a Transformers show where they weren't the focus, you know?
Yeah.
And I think Animated did that to a point.
Oh, it did a great job of it. And it made
yeah,
it
but I'd love to see a show where, I mean, there was no, I mean, Optimus Prime was a cameo, you know, where you'd see him once in a while, but the main character wasn't Optimus Prime for every single Transformers series since G1, you know, excluding Beast Wars, which Optimus Primal was just an analog to Optimus Prime.
Yeah.
You know, he was conceived to be a future version of Optimus Prime. So I want to see, you know, the Transformers show that breaks that chain, that takes the first step into, you know, let's see something different. And is Hasbro going to do that? No. Optimus Prime, even to many fans today, even to many people listening to this episode, Optimus Prime is Transformers. And I understand that. I'm not saying that you're wrong.
Yeah, it's all cool.
It just would be cool to see something different for once in 25 years.
Yeah, the main character is Young Cup.
Yes, yes. That would actually save me greatly. I would love that. Also, just this is another brief tangent. This comes off something Seth was saying about Quintessons. I don't mean to stretch this out. Just this was a very good question, so, you know, grats one that is. I also, one of the reasons why I dug Quintessons so much and why I dug season 3 so much was it showed how in a sci-fi universe of hundreds of different planets that all have civilizations, it in at least a small way showed how Transformers played in to a bigger universe where they are not the only players. And actually, oddly enough, that's the thing I liked the most about Spotlight Drift, when they showed this, like, alien bar, and then when they realize a Cybertronian is in there, they're like, oh, it's one of those friggin' Cybertronians, you know, they're insane. their bodies turn into vehicles and they fight all the time. They're psychopaths. Like, get them, get out of our bar. Like, I love the idea of, in season three, dealing with just things like, you know, Skuckzoids or whatever. Like, you know, you go to other planets and you see how just some random alien civilization, like the Varukians or whatever, you know, how do they react to these robotic life forms that have been, you know, fighting across 15 different planets? Like, I like the idea of showing Transformers in the bigger picture of a fully fleshed out sci-fi universe. So that's another case where the conflict would be in the backdrop, but it wouldn't necessarily be the focal point of the story.
Yeah, well, in our little fantasy story here, season one, battle against the Quintessons. Season ends with the Quintessons defeated and going into hiding. Season two, the Decepticons are pressing the notion of, now we need to expand our territory, and we need to go out and attack other planets. And then the conflict starts with the Autobots saying, no, we're not. We didn't defeat the Quintessons to become the Quintessons. We just need to mind our own. And then you can have all these stories with these other races. And
yeah.
And then season three could be the beginning of the Great War.
And that also would be like, oddly enough, the movie prequel comics to Revenge of the Fallen touched on that with how the Decepticons just went out and, you know, there was some alien race that was going to go out and conquer Cybertron, and the Decepticons just went out and ripped them to shreds. And I liked that because I was like, not only was it showing their interaction with another alien race, it was showing their interaction with an openly hostile alien race that doesn't care about Cybertronians. They just are out to kill another planet. And I just like the whole thing of making it so it wasn't like, you know, the big special Transformers who everyone knows and looks up to. It was like they're just another race that this random conquering race was going to try to steamroll.
How dare you, one that is, you incite this wonderfully detailed conversation of fiction that we're never going to get, because the next cartoon is just going to be 100% derivative and all this is not going to make any difference in the end. So thanks a lot, buddy.
Thanks, man. Thanks.
Yeah, good job. You and your voice.
Now we're never going to sleep well again. We're going to be friggin' depressed all the time. 100% of the time! But thank you very much for that question, because I think it was a very good one. And it was a very simple question, and those are always the best ones, because they have the most deep kind of thing.
The simple questions are good, because we have simple minds.
Yeah. Detailed questions make us confused.
Simple things amuse simple people.
Anyway, I think that's a good place to cap this recording off. So thanks for listening in again, everybody. That was episode 63. I don't think 63 has special connotations in any way, so I don't know why I brought that up. I was I had a plan, but it didn't actually exist. So thank you for tuning in. Thank you, Gog and Seth. Thank you, Drew, wherever you may be. Have you guys got anything I want to say at the end here? Or? Yeah. ODST.
Better drop.
Half-Life 2 for life.
Keep it clean.
Keep it clean. Keep it CFW. Custom firmware. 5.50. Out now. Someone tell me how to get Neo Geo running on this thing. Anyway, I'll talk to you guys later. I'll talk to you guys later.
And I'll talk to you later, listener. I'm right here in your ear. Good night.
I know, but that's what I mean. I'd have to write down and go and seek out this mysterious clip at 1 hour in.
Jesus, never mind.
Just re-record it.
It'll be fake. I'll be like, hey guys, Uncle Frank left something funny, debauchery, in the holodeck. Oh, we're going to start recording now.
Good. I'll make it better.